Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
And I am joined by the number one New York Times bestselling author, Patricia Cornwell, who is out with her 29th, if you can believe that, Scarpetta novel. This one's called Identity Unknown. It is available everywhere. Patricia, every time I read a new Scarpetta novel, it reminds me of how old I'm getting, because I still remember back in the 90s, my dad calling me at college and saying, you've got to check out this postmortem book, and it was my introduction to it. And now, as I'm looking back on almost 30 of these books, it's just amazing that it's gone on this. Well, it's not amazing, but it's just crazy how fast time flies. So, but this one, Scarpetta jumps into this whole idea of it involves an abandoned theme park, and there's been a trend lately on social media of abandoned places. And so what intrigued you to incorporate an abandoned theme park to this book? Because I think it's such an eerie setting for something to happen.
Well, you know, I think anything that's been abandoned is eerie. And I remember as a little kid, you know, if there was an old house that nobody lived in anymore, or if you would go off into the woods, because I lived, you know, I grew up in Western North Carolina, and so it wasn't uncommon to go hiking in the mountains and see an old dilapidated log cabin, for example. And I would always wonder who had been there and why did they leave, and you know, is it haunted? These sorts of things. So I actually saw a picture on the internet of an Oz theme park that had been closed down, and I was so struck by the yellow brick road, because, you know, it had dead leaves on it. You know, if you imagine something like that, and I found it such an intriguing image. And of course, I've always loved The Wizard of Oz. It's one of my favorite stories. And so I wanted to use that as a setting. Not only is it creepy and eerie, and very strange things happen when Scarpetta and her crew get there, but it also is metaphorical, because it's like I'm taking you on a journey. It's like I want to sweep you up in a tornado and land you in a magical land where something very weird happens, something very scary. And Scarpetta, Marino, Lucy, Benton, they all have to solve that.
Well, the other aspect of this book, and this term I had never heard before reading this book, this UAP, Unidentified Anomalous Phenomenon, and it sounds kind of interchangeable with UFOs, but is there a distinction without a difference?
No, there really isn't. A UFO and UAP are basically the same thing. What you're talking about in any case is simply something that's traveling through the air that, when it's picked up on radar or sensors or even optically, you know, something that's seen by, for example, fighter jet pilots, when it's picked up with all these different in all these different ways, and we don't know what it is. It's a little bit like dealing with designer drugs. You know, you've got drug screens, but if somebody changes the composition of a designer drug, the drug screen won't pick it up anymore because it doesn't recognize its chemical composition. It could be just one little thing that's different. So we don't know that a UAP or a UFO is necessarily of non-human origin, such as extraterrestrials flying around. But it also, because it could be something that we can't identify, but it was made here on Earth. However, that doesn't mean it's not from some other origin either, because there are reports of these objects in the sky that people are seeing and sensors are picking up on that seem to defy the technologies that we're capable of today, the way these things move around. Now, people can think whatever they want, but the point is, what would Scarpetta do if she gets notified about a body that's been dropped out, you know, in this abandoned theme park, but it looks like this person was dropped out of a UAP. In fact, one was picked up on radar and other sensors at the time that this body probably, you know, landed where it did. It seems to have trauma consistent with falling from a great height. The body seems to have radiation exposure, and there's a crop circle around it because the dogwoods are in bloom, and some sort of centrifugal force caused those petals to land in a circle around this body. So all of this causes Scarpetta to have to deal with this case in a very unusual way. But as always, there's a scientific explanation for everything that you're seeing.
You know, as I read the book, I thought about interviews I've listened to over the years of people who worked at the highest level of governments, and a lot of them have said that one of the biggest questions they get is, are there really UFOs? Are there really aliens? You know, all this Area 51 stuff. Did you find, as you did your research, there's a lot more interest in this than people tend to let on?
Oh, I think there is. I mean, I went to see the Green Bank Telescope in West Virginia in the middle of the radio quiet zone where you can't get a cell signal or anything. And, you know, this telescope, which is as high as the Statue of Liberty, is tall and about 100 feet wide, and it is tracking things many, many, many light years away in our universe. And I talked to the astronomers there, and I said, well, look, you're following the Voyager space probe, you know, you're looking at all these things, galaxies many, many light years away. Do you think we're the only life out here? And they all said, absolutely not. They said, we absolutely believe that the universe is full of life. And as I was saying earlier, statistically, it's improbable that we are the only life in the universe. You know, when I was a little kid, we only knew of the planets in our solar system. We couldn't see beyond that. Now, because of things like the Hubble telescope and the Webb telescope, we are finding thousands and thousands of exoplanets. An exoplanet just means it's a planet outside of our solar system. And the idea that there is no life but just here on Earth really just doesn't make any sense. And I think that it's a good thing for people to be thinking about. I think, you know, if there are societies of beings out there that are much more sophisticated and highly evolved than we are, that should be something to aspire to, not something to be afraid of.
As I've read your last few books, I know you covered the Jack the Ripper, both in a nonfiction way and kind of in a fictitious way, and then also with the Bigfoot and now UFOs. Is there a certain maturity as a writer that you need in order to effectively cover these in the art that you put out? I mean, could you have written this book 30 years ago? Setting aside just the science, do you have to be a certain level of maturity as a writer to do this effectively?
I said, you know, no, I don't think I could have written this book 30 years ago. In fact, I know I couldn't have. I didn't know all the things about outer space back then that I know now. Because about in 2017, I started doing research with NASA and all sorts of other places and industries that deal with space. And the reason I did that is I had decided to write a couple space thrillers, which I did, and nobody was much interested in them, I must say. But it's been an amazing learning experience, and it's giving me new colors on my palette when I'm telling you a Scarpetta story. So I couldn't possibly have discussed in an intelligent way the notion of UAPs, UFOs, the possibility of extraterrestrial life or any of that back in the 90s. And there wasn't the same interest in it. And we didn't know as much as we do today. I mean, it's a very different era. 30 years is quite, it's almost like a whole nother era in terms of what we didn't even really have cell phones or the internet or much of anything we were doing back then, much less knowledge of all these exoplanets.
I'm chatting with Patricia Cornwell about her brand new Scarpetta novel. It's called Identity Unknown. The book's available everywhere. And Patricia, as the book's written in first person, so we get it from Dr. Kay Scarpetta's point of view. And one of the things I pick up is her frustration with the stories that are told to her by law enforcement or whoever, by the reporting people about how a death occurred versus what the science shows. And she, in the book, goes to great pains. I don't know about this great pains, but she explains the thought process is she's just worried about the science. I mean, the facts are what they are. She sees what she sees. Is that a struggle for somebody in her position as a medical examiner to hear these stories about what has been told about how a body got on her table versus what the science is showing? And how does a medical examiner effectively deal with that struggle?
Well, the medical examiner, it's very important that medical examiners have good working relationships with law enforcement, because those are the people who are bringing the evidence and notifying them about the case. And they immediately are going to have a lot of their own ideas about what happened in a certain situation, and it may seem logical, but then when Scarpetta opens up a body or she's doing an external examination and perhaps find things that don't add up. For example, in the beginning of Identity Unknown, she's doing the autopsy of a child abuse murder. I mean, she thinks it's a murder. It's being supposedly, she's being told it's not, that the child got hold of the father's gun and had an accident. Well, when Scarpetta starts doing her scientific inquiry, which includes doing shooting reconstructions and taking measurements, she can show that child could not have been holding that gun when this happened. And so that can be very frustrating when you have people that have a decided idea of what happened, but what you're seeing does not fit with those theories. And sometimes that can cause a lot of conflict, and there are times when the medical examiner can get leaned on politically, depending on who we're talking about, can get leaned on politically. You know, do you really want to go down that road? Are you really sure that's what happened here? You do realize you're going to ruin the parents' lives, and on it goes, but she has to stick with what the body tells her. She has to stick with what the evidence tells her. And it doesn't matter what she feels or what she wishes to be true. If she has evidence that says otherwise, she has to listen to that. That's just the way it goes.
It seems like to me in the justice system that the places that are most ripe for corruption are in the science side of things, because if the medical examiner, I mean, Scarpetta is a heroic character, but humans are humans, you can make the science say what you want. And so is that something in the nonfiction world that everybody's aware of? Because it seems like if somebody that's involved in science says something, there's no real way to test it other than the integrity of who's doing the examination.
Well, that is very true. And we've had, you know, there are terrible stories out there about scientists who have, for one reason or other, decided to falsify their reports, you know, for example, to make it look like that they've gotten hits on a lot more toxicology cases or gotten evidence to help the police, and then you find out later that in a case we had up here in Massachusetts, for example, that something was misrepresented. And the bigger danger is, you know, someone like Dr. Scarpetta working on a very visible case, and then the phone rings and it's the governor, or it might be the mayor of the city she's in, and perhaps they're trying to convince her to maybe not rule a certain way in terms of what the manner of death is. This is not as uncommon as you would think, because for some people would much rather, for example, that their loved one died from an accident than died from suicide. And that's a big one, where sometimes people try to influence the medical examiner. But in the perfect world, these scientists need to simply stick with the evidence and say what's true. And by the way, when you referenced the Jack the Ripper case earlier, I do want to point out, a lot of people refer to that as a novel. I know you didn't, but it is not. It is strictly nonfiction. Everything that I tell you in that book is true. It is not in any way fictionalized. It is like doing a biography. I simply reported the facts, including the scientific facts that would indicate, you know, that my theory that Walter Sickert, you know, was Jack the Ripper. But again, when you're going to present something as true, doesn't matter what you want to be true, you have to say it like it is.
And ooh, that was a good book too, by the way. Before I let you go, I got to ask, with all the different different ways that Scarpetta is now going to television and streaming services, have you noticed from a commercial standpoint on the literary side? I mean, are you selling all of a sudden a ton more copies of Postmortem now than you ever were when people are just now finding her on the TV side of things?
Well, you know, I don't know yet, but I hope that will be true. But you see, there are a lot of people don't quite know that much about the TV show yet because, well, it starts filming in just a couple weeks. And it will film, I think, you know, all the way through probably February or something of next year. And then at some point next year, Amazon will release the first of the two seasons that they've ordered. And it will be my hope, of course, it's going to run for a long time. But you know, I hope that people will enjoy the show. Don't expect it to be exactly like my books, because that's not possible. And that's what's going to make it more fun, too. You get something extra. And I hope that those people who've not read these books will, because I think that they will enjoy spending that time with these characters.
Well, it's just been such a great relationship reading about Scarpetta all these years. This new book is called Identity Unknown. It's the latest Scarpetta novel by the number one New York Times bestselling author, Patricia Cornwell. Patricia, just another fine offering. I look forward to it every fall, and I thank you for joining me again to talk about it.
Well, thank you. That was fun.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time. Into the great wide open.